morning, everyone, and welcome to the follow-up for the Compassionate Scheduling Workshop. Let's just start right in. In the last workshop, we looked at why a schedule is important to us, what the benefits of a schedule are. We made a schedule and then looked at who made the schedule, who got left out of the schedule, and the implications of that. We explored what works for us in making and keeping a schedule and what doesn't, and whether or not we applied that knowing when we made schedules. And finally, we looked at compassion for the human being as an attitude of mind when approaching prioritizing what's important in life, rather than making compassion the objective of a scheduling process. So we've been practicing with schedules based on this past workshop, and today we'll explore where we need more clarity or support in being successful with making and keeping schedules. So take a moment to just close your eyes, take a couple of nice long deep breaths, and consider where you are in your practice of making and keeping schedules, in your practice of compassionate scheduling. And allow it to drop in for you what would be helpful to look at. Just take a couple of minutes to get clear on that.
What was that last question, Ashwini?
Just take a couple of minutes to get clear on what you might need more support or some clarity around, clarification around.
Thank you.
And when you get a sense of that, open your eyes, please. And who would like to go first? Star 6 to unmute.
Ashwini, that's Catherine.
Catherine.
Hi. What was dropping in for me is my schedule became, I did it sometimes. I didn't do it every day. And when I did, it started becoming like a to-do list rather than in a compassionate way to include in the day support for the practitioner, for the human, things that would be really joyous things to do, would be supportive. And I'm just seeing that I loved the workshop, and I loved the schedule that came out of that, and insights that other people were having, and I just loved it, and I thought, oh, this is great, and then it fell by the wayside. So I'm saying I want to recommit. And
you're saying what, Catherine? That you're what?
I want to recommit to daily schedule, and one that I can really put a lot of time, or enough time, sufficient time and sufficient thought into what would support me, what do I want this day to be, how do I want to be, and what would support that.
Mm-hmm. So no commercial on this one, Catherine, but the next workshop on the 25th is Practicing Keeping Commitments.
Right. Yeah. And this right? is going to be, this is going to
yes.
be my commitment.
Well, the reason I bring that up is because it's really true, right? We get really, really inspired about something, and we fall in love with the possibility and then it becomes what we, it's a classic pattern that you're describing, right? There's something that inspires us, it shows us a whole bunch of possibility, then we get on board with it, and then it is this arc of becoming either dead or not what we envisaged it to be, or robbed of the excitement and the possibility that it was supposed to deliver, right?
Right. Yeah.
And so it doesn't work, and then we feel bad, and then we recommit, and it happens all over again. I mean, you've seen that with multiple commitments,
yeah.
as have I. And here's the reason why, and it's something to consider, right, which is that it's what I said in the last line of the workshop. The schedule is not compassionate. It's the approach to scheduling that is compassionate. What you were in when you listened to that workshop was a place of love and inspiration. What you were in when you were following the schedule was not love and inspiration.
Right.
Right? The
right.
process of keeping the commitment, as you said, I mean, keeping the schedule becomes a to-do list because that's the process we're in. We're in a doing process, not the being process. And the fundamental belief that we all are so deeply conditioned into is it was the scheduling and the possibility of the schedule that makes me feel so inspired. You were inspired. That's why the schedule was inspiring. The workshop was inspiring. Not that the object, which was the schedule, and how you keep the schedule that's going to give you happiness.
So it was the place I was in rather than
That's right.
the content of what I was doing and looking at and that kind of thing.
Yes. Exactly. Exactly. That there's a way in which we lose the process of love and inspiration and willingness to support the human practitioner, that place gets projected onto the schedule and the keeping of the commitment, and that's how the ego takeover happens. It goes to the what then rather than the how. So something that I practice with in the scheduling process is, can you go back to what is inspiring for you or what you love, and practice bringing that love to what you're doing, rather than doing something without love and hoping for a different experience.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yes, that's helpful.
Yeah, and
that's
it's a very specific, you can do it in a very specific way so that you can practice it, right? So let's just say you take a particular thing on your schedule, and it probably doesn't happen the first day of the schedule because there's still that enthusiasm of having created the schedule and feeling supported. A couple of days into the schedule, you find yourself getting to that place of having to do it like you would do a list of chores. As soon as you're aware of that, pick up the recorder and go, I want to do this because I love this human being. I want to support this human being. And see if the task happens to be, say, meditate. You can sit in meditation and focus your attention on love. Can you meditate in love? See if you can bring that to different things on the schedule. Because the schedule is just allowing you to have a structure to put down into awareness what is important to the human being. Right? But to bring love to that task is a completely different practice.
Yes. Yes. That's very helpful. And I can do that.
And you can do it on your schedule, right? So let's just say your schedule has meditate and cook a healthy meal. And instead of saying meditate and cook a healthy meal, the schedule would say, meditate in love with Catherine, or create this meal for Catherine to enjoy. And now you're practicing something different.
Oh, yes. Oh, that's great. I love that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, I guess we're going to have another follow-up, Catherine, for us to find out
yeah.
how it works.
Yes, yes, yes. I'm for that. Okay. Thank you.
This is Laura.
Laura.
Oh, my gosh. I feel like that, we could technically end the call now, and I could go and just practice with that because that was just really helpful. I woke up this morning with that voice kind of like, oh, I don't want to, you know, do whatever is next, you know. And what I saw was I know there's always choices, but there was this out. Like, my experience at the monastery versus my experience at home is when I'm at the monastery, there isn't an out to the schedule or there isn't an out to my choices to do things that are helpful to this person. I just do it. But when I'm at home, I can so easily get talked out of doing what, you know, intelligence knows is intelligent.
Yes. So what you're observing is the wisdom of no escape in the monastery structure, which is why we want to practice in those structures, because what we're practicing there, right, Laura, is to be trustworthy, that when the voice says there is an out, you don't believe it. You don't go with it. Right?
Right.
Because
right.
In some way, I'm not saying this is true. Let's just say there's meditation on the schedule. If the voices were talking to you hard enough, loud enough, they could get you to sleep through morning meditation if they chose.
Mm.
Right? So it's really not, there's a way in which the human being has already succumbed to or has submitted to the liberation in the schedule at the monastery. And if that's not happening at home, it just simply means that it's a different practice. You can't create a schedule. You can't get someone to enforce it for you. And so what you're practicing is something else. And that's really what you are tuning in on, right? The insight is, I get told, and I believe, that there's an out, that I can sort of, it's fluid. I don't have to keep the commitment to the human being here because something else can override that priority, right? And so what you're practicing now in your scheduling process is very specific. What doesn't work is being told I have flexibility when I don't. Now, you do want to be really paying close attention to that because you don't want to be not spontaneous and present and appropriate to what's arising. But it's my A-B test practice scenario, right? So on Monday, if anything attempts to interrupt your flexibility, you're going to not go with it. On Tuesday, if anything interrupts with your flexibility, I mean your commitment, you're going to go with it, right? And that way, we once again translate it into the wisdom of no escape because this is the specific you're practicing and you're training her to a reality in which prioritizing her is still more important than the prioritizing the voices. But that training isn't something that comes easily to her in her home environment. It comes absolutely easy for her in the monastery environment. So instead of being a big deal, it just becomes a very specific training focus for, say, 2 weeks. Every day, on, off, flexibility versus inflexibility, or go with the schedule. Or there are certain things that are non-negotiable. That might actually work better for you. So if something comes in to say you can skip your workout, then for a whole week, you're never going to skip your workout. And then next week, that's the thing that you can negotiate and be flexible about. But what that trains you to do is to bring conscious awareness to the prioritization rather than just believing you're in a reality where you can fudge the schedule.
I love that, and I am committing to that practice, and I'm also putting my hand up for another accountability call or follow-up call. That is amazing. Yep. Okay.
Wonderful.
I'm committed.
All right. Thank you, Laura.
Hi, this is Judy.
Okay, I heard a bunch of voices, none of which were clear. So can you say that again?
Bev.
Judy.
Bev and?
Judy.
Judy. Okay, Bev, and then Judy.
Okay, I have really enjoyed this. I've always resisted scheduling, and I have found that this is just really helping to keep me focused on my day. On it reminds me to come back.
Yes, exactly. So if we're using the structure in a way to get us to presence, rather than using the structure to get something done, then we're using it in a way that supports us, right?
Right. I have been traveling, and I'm going to be away from my home for 2 months. So I thought, oh, I'll just wait till I get settled where I'm going. And I thought, no. And I made a schedule with the help of my Zen coach for when I was traveling. And I kept it very simple, and it kept me focused, and I made it through the transition of traveling. It was just really nice to do that. And my Zen coach had me mail her a copy of it, not for her to look at it or just to have someone to send it to. And that really helped me as well, to be able to have someone to just email that copy to. And even if they weren't going to read it or comment on it, just knowing that I did it, that really helped as well.
Yes. So there was accountability. You asked for support. And here's the most important thing that I heard in that, right, Bev, which is to be appropriate to transitions and changing circumstances, right? Because the way we get tripped up in scheduling and suffer around it is the schedule that I had when I was in one place needs to be the schedule that I have in a different place, right? And there's nothing built how do I take care of? It's not being present to my experience. And so to be able to change up what I do to take care of myself when I don't know what my routine is going to be or what my circumstances to be is so intelligent that routines get established over time. And if the routine is interrupted, to know, to be able to be open to life to say, I actually don't know what it's going to be. So the way I establish my routine has to be different until I have more information about my rhythms.
Yes, and I found one thing that my coach really stressed was when I look at the schedule, and what I did is I put the schedule in the notes section on my phone so I could pull it up anywhere, anytime, and, you know, see what I had planned for the day. And if I didn't do it or I didn't get there, so what? I checked it, and I just thought, okay, I didn't get this done, but I intended to, and a lot of stuff that I intended to, I got done, you know, and it was just looking at it and having it on my phone was very helpful to look that up. And
such a good tip.
Yeah, it's been a really interesting experience.
Yes.
And I haven't kept a lot of the things that I started out with, but the main things, my practice, I have been doing. I kept my practice commitments every day. So I feel that's really great.
Yes. Well, I think you're illustrating what we're saying, right? There's intelligence, there's appropriateness, there's the schedulers to support you, not to punish you or make you feel bad or make you the wrong person, right? So if the structure is used in that way, if we bring compassion to the process rather than be the person who has to maintain the schedule and then suffer because you can't and suffer because it's not just that you can't, but the circumstances are impossible for you to maintain the schedule, then what we're really practicing is coming to compassion in in doing what supports the human being appropriately to the circumstances. And that is a recipe for a non-suffering life.
And finally, it taught me, because the voices will say, oh my gosh, you haven't done blah, blah, blah today or whatever. But if I go back and look at my schedule, I did a lot of it. That's not true. But it will have me think that it's because there's just never enough. I'm never going to please the voices. But having that written down and going back and looking at it, it was like, well, that's just not true. That's not true. Or maybe it was, and I just need to think, well, how can I have it happen tomorrow?
Yes. Oh, that's such an important point, right, Beth? So three things that you're saying. One is, we always can tell what the voices do to us, right? It's never enough. So they're always pointing to the one thing that didn't get done. And what we're training to do with writing everything out is to come from the perspective, a recontextualized perspective of all the things that have worked or have been done, right? That's the first training, because that allows us not to be looking through a lens of conditioned mind, through a lens of negativity. The second is, when you realize that there was something you didn't do, what you're open to is learning, right? That insight around what happened around that gets applied to the schedule or your next day, because it's a dynamic process. It's not fixed. Your presence gives you information all the time. And if I'm constantly learning and adjusting, I'm always more successful, because I'm not referencing something that's static.
Right. Yes, it's just, I've really enjoyed it. So thank you very much, and gosho.
Thanks, Bev. Gosho. Judy.
Yes, I'd like some guidance on working with distraction and overwhelm, especially when my energy is sky high, like now after the New Year's retreat. I plan my schedule, and then I think, oh, that calls to me. I want to do that. And even when I focus, it's, oh, you forgot about this, and this is even more important, you know, and then I get all scrambled.
So what you notice that doesn't work is, especially in high-energy places, is that there's so much living in possibility that the schedule gets overbooked.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
And distracted.
Yeah.
So I'm going to focus on this and not let anything distract me. And then I think, oh, I should have thought about that. That's even more important. And off I go. Off conditioning goes.
And so, Judy, tell me more about that process for you. Is it that, so let's just say you're really, really excited and you decide that your focus is going to be what?
Well, they have all these New Year challenges about minimalizing and cleaning the house. You know, so I find challenges on three different websites, and three different websites are giving me a structure of things to do, and then I get overwhelmed and exhausted and depressed. So it's kind of that up and down cycle.
Yes. So to notice that the process that you're in is a high energy place, and so then the way in which the energy gets translated from the human being to egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate is to sign up for more things out of excitement and then deplete the energy because you can't do them all.
Exactly. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And they all call to me. You know, I often wonder how you handle the monastery when there are 300 plus acres and all have to be taken care of. You know, how do you decide? Because everything looks wonderful.
Well, you know, life prioritizes what gets done, right, Judy? But here's a place to start looking and to explore, because if we move from the perspective that I have to do it all, to recognizing that I'm in a place of high energy, then you don't have to dissipate the energy. Sherry is the best example of it. She said, you know, every moment I live here in possibility, thousands and thousands of things are calling to me to do. I could write this book. I could start this organization. I could start this website. I could, right? When we live in presence, think about it. The sum total of everything that's happening in the universe is available to you in the moment as potential and possibility. That's the experience of living in the moment. It doesn't mean you have to do any of those things. It just means that you're excited about the possibility of doing them all. Does that make sense?
Yes, completely. And it's just what you said. I want to do them all, then I get overwhelmed, and then that all get all the energy gets sucked out.
Right. So to recognize first that when you're being called to do something, you're in a state of being in awareness, and you don't have to do something, right? And so then, in order to assist the human being, I would that's what I do when I feel like there's so much possibility that's calling to my attention. You recognize the process of being in possibility and potential, and you don't commit to anything. That's the practice. Don't commit to anything in that moment.
Pick
up the recorder and talk about how fantastic it feels, how wonderful it feels to be challenged and all of that. And then you make an appointment with yourself. This is one technique to say, at 2:30 this afternoon, I'm going to sit down and see what's the one thing that occurs for me to do that I might want to put on the schedule. I never make the commitment out of that place of excitement.
Okay.
Right?
That's helpful.
You know, you'll just see how this works as you learn more about this process of being overcommitted due to excitement. And one of the things that's really helpful to me, especially having worked with Sherry in this process, is that place of what she always says, if something occurs to me more than 3 times or 4 times or 5 times over the course of time, then I know life is asking me to commit my energy to it. But if it's just, you know, it occurs to me once, then I'm just here living in that as a possibility, but not necessarily something I want to implement.
Okay.
You want to find out for yourself if this is just a momentary flash of excitement, if it's something that really is something you want to commit to, and I project you've had that experience. I don't know, learning a language, for example.
Sure.
There's something that keeps coming up and coming up and coming up, and so then you make the first move, and then you get interested in it, and there's a rhythm or a commitment that takes that forward that's much more grounded than I want to do this, and I want to do this, and I want to do this, because that only occurred to me in this moment.
Okay. I can take that on. That's very helpful. Yeah,
and maybe the starting place is to just recognize and have excitement rather than have that excitement dissipated into implementation or doing, which is automatically a transfer of energy from potential to dissipation. You can't have energy if you're using the energy to do.
Right. And I imagine, I'm wondering if the other side of the duality is true. So when I'm depressed and low energy and nothing looks appealing, that it's the same thing. I can record about that and then see where that leaves me.
Oh, absolutely. Because that, you know, if you're feeling depressed, it certainly means that somehow or the other, there's a leak in your energy system going towards ego. You're just not in awareness about it. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's, we fundamentally believe that we feel something that's good or joyful or something because of what we do, not because of the process we're attending to. That's what we want to catch on. When I'm depressed, I know that I am listening to something, not listening to, but identified with something that's not in my awareness. So the reason I pick up the recorder at that point is to bring into awareness what's not in awareness. I'm coming to awareness. And when you come to awareness, we're not depressed. So we really want to be clear about the process we're in. The process I'm in is depression, which means that ego's got me somewhere. So I'm going to pick up the recorder in order to shift the process from unconsciousness and subliminal messages to conscious awareness, where I'm aware of everything that's going on, and therefore I can't be depressed.
And I bet the self-facilitation that we learned at the New Year's retreat is going to be real potent here.
Absolutely. Just facilitate her and ask her questions about what she's thinking about, what she's feeling, why she's feeling it. And, you know, Judy, the real thing to get about all this, it's never about the content. Absolutely never. It's not about what she's worried about. But by talking to her about what she's worried about, you're moving from unconsciousness to conscious awareness. And that's the whole thing. That's just it. We don't have to resolve anything. We just have to shift track from unconsciousness to consciousness. That's it. And it immediately releases the energy. Because one is a energy suck, and one is a liberation of energy, right?
Yes, right. So it's either over energy, or it's modulating energies for presence, I guess. Is that?
Well, that's a good way of saying it, that presence modulates your energy.
Presence, yes.
Than, right? So if I'm in a conversation, I can be guaranteed that my energy is going to ego. So it's a leaving of energy, right? But when I'm here, the energy is the energy of presence, which is very appropriate. It could be I just came out of a phenomenal retreat in which I have a lot of energy and I just sit with that lot of energy. Or you might have gone for a, 25-mile bike ride, at the end of which it's still life energy, but it's not a very high energy. It's a very grounded, feeling spent energy, right? So presence modulates your energy because it's appropriate to the circumstance. But ego is always an energy suck. It's always a thing.
Okay. That's great. That's great. Thank you, Ashwini. That's really helpful.
Thanks, Judy. Thanks, Judy. Who else?
Ashwini, this is Janice.
Janice.
I just want to say that this has been phenomenal, and I just can't believe even when you started and just said what we looked at last time, I could see how it was like a checklist of all the things we could do. And even that first introduction you had was so important to me to rehear it. Because I've seen the schedule, I'm working with the schedule, I'm seeing that I've come home from retreat, and there's some days where I have had to be flexible because there is a new routine. And it's this call, I'd like to say, I'd love to have another one to this checking in again and moving deeper and deeper is exactly what I need. And I'm very grateful.
Yeah. It's a way of grounding ourselves back, right, Janice? That to go through the framework of our intentions. First of all, to have one, and then to go through the framework of it is a way to be supported by the structure, right? Because especially if we've transitioned into a different schedule, like you did, or have been in traveling, and so therefore transitioning in travel and back into your schedule is challenging, to be able to know, I'm not reinventing the wheel here. There's actually a way in which I've done this process before, because what conditioning will make us vulnerable to is, I feel it's everything is everywhere. I have no way to get my arms around what I need to do next. But there's a process, right? And so you make the schedule. You remind yourself about what the schedule is about, who gets in there, who doesn't get in there, what works, what doesn't work. And just having a way to check something in the structure of life really, really grounds the energy, right? It takes us from that frantic, I don't know, to, I actually do. I have something that can support me in the process of recreating the structure that will help me live my life according to what I care about the most.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I'm constantly learning, and I just love the way of looking to see how ego will say that there's oh, there's this one thing that didn't get done. And turning the attention to that checklist and saying, wow, and how important it is to just keep saying, well, you know, today this is what I'm doing, and just do it without, you know, a noodle factor.
Yes, yes, exactly. Just what am I doing today? And, you know, Janice, I think you're pointing to something which is really important, which is that if we don't have interrupts in our lives in order to be able to look at things and see what we value, mm-hmm. We just get driven by circumstances and conditioning, right? So
right.
It's important to be present to what I want to do today and have that be informed by life and live a present life. And it's important at some point to go, okay, I'm going to take this hour on Saturday to really look at whether or not in my daily schedule I still have things that I find valuable and what got left off and what I want to reprioritize and what I want to move around. That process, you know, somebody I read calls it deep time, that
deep
we get
time.
To live a Yeah, live in the surface of our daily activity, and we want to interrupt that with pockets of deep time that allow us to drill into our depths, for our depths to tell us, okay, this wasn't taken care of. You took care of all these things, but this is another thing that's arising to take care of. Let's prioritize that. But that comes from the depths, and so we have to have time to spend in the depths.
Uh-huh.
Right, for the depth
yeah.
to talk to us and say, okay, yeah, I'm present in every moment, and I'm doing this, and I'm doing this, and I'm doing this, but this is something else that life wants me to take on or needs to feed or feels neglected and needs to be prioritized. And so going back to that place to ask those questions and for it to bubble up is just so enriching.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise we don't have access to that all the time.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, so taking time in the schedule, not to overschedule, but to have time for potential deep time, those little pockets
yes.
of time.
Yeah, and to me that's another point. What happens is, so now deep time has to get scheduled, and I have to find one every week.
Yes.
But there's a wisdom in deep time for me. My rhythm is once mm-hmm. every 4 weeks.
Mm.
My schedule is not just today or
mm-hmm.
a week from now. But so you can actually schedule in these ways, right? So let's just say I have a daily practice. I'm going to always meditate and record and listen and do yoga every day.
Mm-hmm.
That's my priority, and I schedule that. And but when I look at my week, for everything I have to do, it's impossible for me to do those three tasks every day. So then it's when I look at a daily versus a weekly schedule, the rhythm of what gets enforced daily or submitted to daily or scheduled daily may be different from what I would look at if I looked at it a week in advance. But I can also look at it a month in advance. And so
right.
deep times are monthly activities. These three are daily activities.
Mm-hmm.
A call with my mother is a weekly activity, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you
right.
don't need to live your life as only one. I have to do everything every day, which
right.
is another way it gets us. And so to recognize your rhythms for the things that happen in arcs of a time difference that may not be a day and may not be a week and even maybe quarterly. I mean, Judy asked the question about how things get done at the monastery, and that's really
mm-hmm.
it, right? We have a maintenance schedule of these are the daily activities, these are the weekly activities, these are the monthly activities, these are the seasonal activities, these are the quarterly activities, and someone is looking at that when they create the schedule, because when the quarterly activity is due, then it gets put on the schedule. And there's a structure that contains that as information. And that is so relaxing because everything doesn't have to be done every day now,
mm-hmm.
which is how conditioning would would take on scheduling.
Yes.
Yeah.
And a final thing, Ashwini, are these recorded at all that the folks who have signed up for might be able to re-listen to?
Absolutely. Well, just write into information@ and someone will send you the recording.
Thank you.
Jen C.
Thanks, Jen. Janice. Jen.
So I think the thing you said that just feels exactly like my experience in practicing with this since we've had the workshop is that the shift of, instead of the schedule kind of being that acquisitive process that was pointed at in the last focus of the year-long retreat, trying to get something from the schedule, like that promise of, I'm going to get on top of it, so I'm going to get to feel a certain way and have a certain experience, versus the schedule being something that supports presence. And that's been a gigantic shift for me.
That the shift from relying on the schedule to generate a particular feeling to having the feeling and assist, and having the schedule assist us to get back to presence.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think I reflected that accurately.
Yeah, no, exactly. And the thing that it's really, woken up in me is I'm having so much fun with the process. Instead of wrestling with it, you know, instead of kind of being in an adversarial relationship with it, I'm having so much fun with it.
Yes, which tends to be the case, right, Jen, that when we're struggling, it's a suffering process because it's a signal that we're attempting to make something it isn't. Isn't that the definition of struggle?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. And exactly. So my process is I have to get, it's not, I'm not free. I think this is it. I'm not free to be present to how it is and let it inform me.
Precisely. That's it.
Yeah.
It's always been like the less it doesn't go the way I'm trying to make it go, the tighter I need to tighten down around all of it.
Yeah.
And that
means
I need to schedule more closely and more.
Yes. The control factor increases, right?
Exactly.
But what we don't get is that we're the ones being, the control is being exerted on me not to be present. That's the only control that's being being exerted. It's funny when you said that, what dropped in was this this thing I was reading about somewhere about how working with wood is that you have to be able to let the wood talk to you for it to reveal the grain and the place where it's flowing and where you can cut it. And it's a very different relationship than going, okay, here's a piece of wood I want to make look the way I want to make look. And it's not with the wood, it's over the wood, right?
Yeah.
My control is over that piece of thing. And that life works when we're in that relationship of receptivity to it, where it can reveal how it wants to work with us.
And that's where the beauty is revealed. Because, I mean, I can go right there with the wood and how, you know, if I'm going to impose my will on the wood, and I don't care that there's a knot there, I'm going to cut it right down the center of the ha-ha, you know, there's a way in which I miss the exquisite, unique beauty of this piece of wood. It's not able to express itself, if you will.
That's right. And you miss the communion with it, right, which is the experience of being present to it. And in some way, it highlights the difference between separate and non-separate, right? In non-separation, you're with the wood. There's no difference between you and the wood, and there's a dance there of time and space and form and expression and all of that. And you are part of that process, not against it.
So one of the things I've been finding as I work with the specifics of it is, I mean, I talk about this a lot, I guess, but just kind of following her around. So the person who's doing the schedule, I'm just following her around, and I just, when I do that without any self-hate and without any, this didn't get done and this should have gotten done, but just to watch, just to be with her, then it's like the process itself informs what does work and what doesn't work. And one of the things that's interesting about that is I connected up with what you said around the, I forget which conversation it was, but basically where you were saying, you know, if something comes up two times and three times and four times, in that place where you said, you know, I'm not scheduling from a place of like, oh, I'm so inspired. Okay, let me do this right now. But rather stay true to the things that I'm, the structures, I'll just give you a clear example. Like I started to, one of the huge insights out of that first workshop that we did was, wow, you know, I could actually schedule sort of this part of the day can be for these things and this part of the day can be for these things, for example, being outside a certain part of the day. And so often things that come up that are unexpected, like the such and such is leaking or the so-and-so isn't, that what I've noticed over time is that those become places of suffering because I didn't expect them, right? And there's no place for them. But the thing is, they come up very regularly. I don't know what's going to come up, but something. So then what if I look for a place in my, and I actually enjoy attending to them. That's the thing. It's just that the only reason there's suffering around it is that there's no space for it. So what if I knew, okay, that's a rhythm that happens. Let me make space for that. And so I've made space for it. And the thing is, some days it doesn't happen, but what I've been practicing with is, that's okay. Let me still have my outside time and just put something that isn't in crisis in there and see what that's like to have that rhythm of always having that space. I don't know how exactly how to say it, even though there's nothing.
Oh, I know.
Right? Yeah, go ahead.
Yes. So, well, this is the giant learning of intelligence that I think you're pointing us to, right, Jen? Because there's a way in which if you create a schedule, the conditioned approach to it is you have to follow the schedule. Rather than the schedule, the first things we learn about anything is learning the process around it, which is what you're referring to as following her around, right? Yeah. The schedule is an experiment, not, you know, something that's a tablet written in stone that was handed down from the gods that we'd be punished if we didn't do. But that's the way conditioning would have us work with a schedule. If it's on the schedule, it has to get done. Not that the first time I'm working with everything, I'm actually putting something out there and I am in a process of learning about who follows the schedule, what the rhythms of life are. I really want to be completely open to gaining information on, it tends to work for me when I do my workout in the morning. It tends to work for me if I do my stretching before I go to bed, right? That's learning. And so that's what you're doing in following her around to see, okay, well, what's going on and how does she respond and what's her rhythm and what's the rhythm of the environment she's in? And then when you learn about the rhythms of the environment, like, for example, this unexpected place that always feels like an interrupt and there's suffering, there's a sitting with it to go, okay, so what is this telling me? And the thing that happens if I'm looking at it from a conditioned mind is I just don't want it to happen. It shouldn't happen. Rather than that place of, well, I notice it's happening all the time. So then what is life telling me? It's something that happens all the time. I need to account for it, not try to avoid it, not try to feel, oh, my God, why does it keep happening and why do I keep suffering and why is it? Because we're not present to the actual information that is being given to us by intelligence. Mm-hmm. And registering it and putting it into our experience of our structures.
Yep.
Right? Yep. It's telling you, I need to be accounted for. I need to be accounted for. I need to be accounted for. And conditioning goes, no, 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 no. You shouldn't be.
Yep.
And then someday it drops and like, okay, well, I just need to account for it. Now I am with what is, and therefore I can include it in what is.
Yep.
Rather than
and it's
about it.
it completely changes the relationship with the thing that pops up. It's like, oh, fun. That's the thing that's going to go in that slot today.
That it's complete and, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Oh, well, just that it's met with delight instead of resistance.
That's right.
And the other little piece of it that I'm playing with, exactly in the way that you talked about, I don't know, we'll see. But what seems to be suggesting itself to me is on a day when something doesn't arise in that slot, to keep that slot anyway, almost sacrosanct in a way, this is what I'm playing with right now, where there's always something that could go in. So I'll just be more specific. So it's my outdoor time where I'm going to be out and about attending to things that have come up. Well, nothing has come up. So the temptation would be, okay, let me go back to my computer and get ahead on email. But instead of doing that right now, especially because it's so new, it's like little fledgling legs getting under it, I don't do that. I'm keeping that as a sacrosanct space because I want to keep that. The instinct right now is to keep that space open so that I don't get into, well, you know, now because there's nothing that really has to be done today, I'm going to go do this other thing. And I just feel I'm enjoying that, the integrity of that process that I'm playing with.
Yes, that is such wisdom. And it's such wisdom for this reason, right, Jen? Because what the schedule gets converted into is how do I manage what I do?
Yeah.
And so if there's something that doesn't get done, there's a slot in which there is no doing involved. We're not trained to go, oh, my God, I just get to be.
Yes.
Because those are life's offerings for deep time,
yes,
for a relationship with life. If it's not about getting things done and life is about being here, then those times when the schedule opens up, those are the times we want to watch for to carve out those times where we want to be present to life, to have life talk to us. I'm interested in trees now, or I'm interested in sitting with the bird, or I'm just going to sit and let the sunshine play across my skin, right? There's the way, those are those unexpected gifts from life to, because nothing arose to have your attention, to have life be your focus of attention. Because there are ways in which, I mean, this is again that beautiful place, right? We can schedule deep time. But we also want to know that when life gives us time to relate to it, we want to jump on it. We want to recognize it and jump on it and not just fill it with something else to get done. That's what brings the magic into existence.
I'm so grateful you just articulated that because it really put words to, I think, what that gut instinct was telling me without seeing that piece of it, because that's the edge for sure for me, for sure.
Yeah.
That it's almost like a practice, like, you know, so there's 7 minutes before meditation that are there, right? And the normal thing would be like 7 minutes. Okay, that's enough time to go ta-ta-ta-ta and still be on time for meditation. And the training of like, no, that's life's invitation to be for a few extra minutes.
Yes, yeah. And it would never occur to us. I could actually get into the hall and meditate for 7 more minutes.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
Because the conditioning is you start meditation X and you meditate for 30
exactly.
minutes and all that's all the time you need to meditate because meditation is a thing, not
exactly.
that meditation
to
is,
check
a,
it off.
Is a way to be,
yeah.
right? A
yeah.
way to be with
yeah.
existence and I get 7 more minutes of it.
I know. It's so good. Yeah. Thank you so much. Amazing.
Thanks,
process.
Jen.
Hi, this is Chris.
Chris.
So something that I saw since the last workshop was it connected with an open air conversation recently where I asked about the comfort zone.
Uh-huh.
And Sherry differentiated between ego's comfort zone and the heart's comfort zone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the dot that I saw, I mean, I saw the inkling in the last workshop when you said we must be willing to be with discomfort.
Mm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Say more about that, Chris. What have you been practicing with around that?
Well, so the first time I heard the heart's comfort zone versus ego's comfort zone, it just was kind of like words. I mean, I kind of could grasp it, but it was just, okay, the heart's comfort zone, what does that mean, was kind of where I got with it. But the more that I am bringing awareness to my schedule and watching the habitual reaction to avoid quote-unquote discomfort is, it's first of all very eye-opening. And there's that side of the coin, but there's the other related side where what happens when I do habitually avoid discomfort is I'm actually living in kind of a familiar hell, if that makes sense.
Oh, absolutely, it does. So that the awareness. So first of all, it's what we were talking about with Jen, right? There's such a level of letting life reveal what we need to know in this process. And so heart versus ego comfort zone. Well, whatever does that mean? And so like a koan, we open up to that being revealed to us, right? And it's revealing in the way you're following the schedule and recognizing how there's a certain rhythm that feels comfortable, within quotes, that you can execute. And the discomfort arises from not being in that familiar rhythm. And then realizing that familiarity is not actually something you want because that familiar pattern is actually hellish. That there's a conflation of comfort and comfort being something that I'm used to, right? That comfort equals doing something that I am used to doing or familiar doing. And actually what you're realizing is the comfort is not related to having an experience that's one of well-being. It's actually quite hellish.
Yeah, and it can feel so, it is that exact, that's exact. The nail on the head with that articulation, because it really is like a concrete example of this process is if I have a task that I have to do or that needs to be done, a big project, let's say, everything else is put off until that is done. And I saw that over and over and over in grad school. I can't do anything tonight because I need to hack away at my paper or, you know, and that would be, if your deadline is in a month, you lose a month of your life because you're continuously getting bamboozled that way.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes. So I love what you're saying, Chris. I mean, I'm so excited about it. I can't barely sit down. because it's a process observation, right? You're seeing how you're controlled. So a big deadline comes in, everything else gets put on hold in order to execute that deadline. And what that process results in is everything that you need to attend to in your life that takes care of you, that is important for your daily existence, gets thrown out of the window. And so the learning from that is how I practice with what works for me when I want to circumvent the process of suffering, right? So the process of suffering, I know, is put everything on hold until this deadline gets met. So I get a deadline. I want to record and listen with a mentor on how I might practice with that, right? And so maybe, as we were talking with Laura, there's one thing that you decide you're not going to put up. Not that you decide, oh, I'm never going to be bamboozled by that, because it's never going to work, right? So if you know your month deadline is out from now, and let's just say your 20-minute jog is what gets thrown to the wayside, you would practice for a month that the 20-minute jog would be non-negotiable, and you'll see what you learn from having something non-negotiable when a deadline is in your horizon. Now, if the deadline is, say, 2.5 months away, you might say, okay, I'm going to do the 20-minute jog every Monday non-negotiable for the first week. Second week, the jog plus my RL practice are non-negotiable. And see how you can bring in all that gets thrown away into a practice framework of scheduling that allows you to get information about an alternative process to the suffering process that you're conditioned karmically to follow.
Yeah, and exactly. And what dropped in when you said that was that will take a willingness to be with ego's discomfort.
Yes, absolutely. It will be an end to, that's right, right? Because if we rephrase it, it's almost as if you go from automatic to having to learn again. That's the discomfort, right? That establishing a new pattern is always uncomfortable because the momentum of the energy has gone to shaping a particular pattern. So it would be, here's an analogy, right? You've dug a hole in the garden. If you're re-digging a hole that's already dug, it takes less effort. But if you have to start digging from scratch onto the in this new place, the amount of effort you've got to do to dig out that hole is so much more. And that's the only discomfort you're experiencing, which is the true experience that starting something that is starting something to create a groove is always harder and takes, or harder meaning it takes more energy. But we're told that experience, that feeling is something to be avoided so that we can just keep going back to the groove that has been established.
Oh, right. And that's how the pattern just keeps maintaining itself.
Exactly. There's always, what is true is there's always a higher level of energy required to establish a new pattern. That is supposed to mean that we don't do it because we can't stand the experience of that higher level of energy. Rather than, oh my God, I'm delighted. So some people starting everything new is wonderful because, you know, going through the same pattern over and over again is awful. In fact, it's uncomfortable for people. But if you realize that that's really all that's going on for you and that's a pattern, now you train to be delighted by and comfort in a state of comfort over higher energy places.
Wow. Yes, exactly, because it ties in with something else you said last time, which was just what does it mean to be in relaxation regardless of what I'm doing? And that's a training, a recalibrating to that.
Yes, exactly so. Exactly so. So it's you recognize what it is, right? This is the I'm a shapeshifter. I'm not just interested in following one shape. I'm interested in being shaped by life and in following new shapes, right? And if I'm interested in being responsive to life, then my training needs to be okay with whatever experience is the sensations in the body, which get interpreted by conditioned mind in creating new shapes. Now that I know that that's what's going on, I don't have to follow the programming of that's just uncomfortable, that's I don't want to do that, I don't want to have that experience, let me just stick with what is my normal way of doing it. Because without an awareness, you weren't aware that that was what was going on, right? Now that you're aware, you can go, my training is I'm going to explore the process of calibrating to this as a natural part of a process that I'm going to engage in repeatedly in life. Because there's always something new in your life, right, Chris? And moving to a new place, getting into a new relationship, finding a new grocery store, buying a new car, whatever it is, or thinking the same things over and over again. Whatever that switch is, it takes a certain bridge. And what I'm training now for is to be okay with any bridges. All bridge situations are now known to me in the sense of I understand the process of having to calibrate to them.
Wow, that is so unbelievably helpful to hear it articulated that way. And I love that language of the shapeshifter. And I also put my hand up and say, if there's going to be another check-in, I will gladly take part.
All right. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you.
We have a couple more minutes. We have about 10 more minutes. Anyone else looking at anything else that they want some assistance with?
Hi, Ashwini. It's Mira.
Mira.
Hi.
Are you feeling better?
I am so much better. I think I had the flu.
Okay, good.
So it's just as well.
Yeah.
One of the things, so there are a couple of things that have come out of the workshop that have been really helpful to me. One is that when I've made schedules in the past, I've always prioritized tasks. And seeing that that's happening and not going along with it has just made me so much more, I don't know, it's like my life doesn't become the doing of tasks if that's not what I make it. Does that make sense?
Yes. Oh my God. That is it in a nutshell, right?
Yeah.
That if all my life is about is doing and doing in that grim way of having to get things done, there's no joy in it. And it's so true that we have to train ourselves to prioritize enjoying being because we've been conditioned out of it. And so if I make it a priority to be over do, then I have a different life experience than if I prioritize doing over be.
Right. And so the way that I've been practicing that is to just not do, to not give in
good
to that.
Good for you. Good for you. Good yeah. for you. Because there's no other way that would happen. And here's the thing, Mira, I would project you're a lot happier and stuff still gets done.
That's absolutely right. There was a belief that I didn't know what my life was about. And being able to look back from this perspective is just, it's so helpful because I can see, just to use that example again, that I can see that if my life is going to be about tasks, I can look back and see, oh, okay, that's the experience that I'm giving myself. That this is what I'm being told and I'm believing is my value.
Yes.
Yes.
And, yes.
Yeah.
So let me see if I got that. That being able to have the experience of prioritizing being over doing allows you to be in touch with what your life is really about. Right? Because what
That's
the
right.
voices are telling you is you don't know what your life is about. As if, and we believe it, right? Because we've been conditioned to what I do is who I am. And what I do is my value in existence, my contribution, my purpose, my meaning. There's no identity without what I do. And it's only when we give ourselves the space not to do that we realize what a lie that is. What you are, which is the experience of being, is what life is. It doesn't have meaning, and it doesn't have purpose, and it doesn't have value that you have to go acquire. It's already all that, right? Because when you're here living your life, being with who you are, you don't even have an inkling of a question of value or productivity or anything else. It doesn't exist. There's no question about it.
Yeah. Yeah, and so that concept of conscious stewardship becomes so important then.
Yes.
Because that's what I'm going for. I'm not going for some conditioned belief that everything in my life will be better if I just do these things.
Yeah, it's so, the biggest lie. It's the biggest lie.
Yeah.
Because I project, Mira, you've done that for a while and you realize it isn't true. It's not giving you any more happiness by doing all of those things. After a while, right, after we do it a couple of times, it's the obvious thing.
Yeah.
That it's not working.
That's right. One of the very first things you said to me, because I said something about trying, and you said maybe that's the problem. And that's exactly what was being enabled.
Was just trying all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so,
because I would project, right, Mira, the trying comes from the lie that somehow or the other there's something that needs to be achieved in order to have what you are already. That trying comes from deprivation and a sense of lack, right? Because it needs to be different rather than the place you're pointing to, which is a sense of it's all here. From here, I have a choice about what I can use from here, right?
Right. Yeah, and when I look back from that perspective, there was actually nothing. There was nothing wrong.
Yes, there's nothing missing.
That's right. That's right. Nothing to see.
And you have to live into that.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because otherwise, I mean, it takes us that long to realize it, right? It takes that long to have a practice that prioritizes it in order for that to become our default experience, from which we fall out once in a while, rather than the opposite of not being in it most of the time and occasionally having some grace by which I experience that.
Yeah. Yeah, and so what I'm seeing as you're saying that is how doing what I've always done with awareness, even though I didn't realize it was awareness, has made it possible to get to where I am right now.
Bingo.
Yeah.
100% true. Oh, let's go do a happy dance.
Yes. That's right. And then seeing how that conscious stewardship then functions as a map.
Yes. 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 And it's not a content map, right? It's a directional process. You know when you're in the groove of conscious stewardship because it is not defined and it's not regulated. It's not legislated. It's not you're only consciously stewarding yourself if you stand on your leg at 3 a.m. in the morning, right? It's much more a flow, a structure of life that becomes familiar to us rather than these things that are driven into the ground as absolutes that you've got to make sure happen.
Yeah. And it seems like it then functions as the alternative to that being driven by all these conditioned, egoistic things. That there's comfort in that.
Yes. There's comfort in it. And I think you bring us to a really, really important point. It's that if you don't cultivate it's very easy to say, you know, I'm gonna drop the conversation. But when you drop the conversation, if you don't have something that your attention is trained to be resting in, then dropping the conversation doesn't result in the practice of being able to have attention here because we haven't cultivated attention here. We've only dropped the conversation. So you need to do both. We need to practice dropping the conversation and we need to practice having attention on I choose unconditional love or I choose peace and whatever in order for there to be that alternative. Otherwise, we're just afloat in something that conditioning can take over.
Oh, that is so helpful. That is so helpful because it really points to why. But I dropped the conversation and it didn't work.
Yes. Yeah. Because it's a training in all of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what the Buddha said. You have to learn how to stop suffering, and then you have to learn. You have to practice what takes you away from suffering, and practice what moves you towards freedom. They are two separate movements. You can't do one and hope to be completely successful, because the other is not available to you until you practice it.
So good. Thank you so much, Ashwini.
Thanks, Mira. You take care of yourself.
Okay, thanks.
And folks, that brings us to the end of this workshop, and it was marvelous to hear from you all, and we'll see about follow-up. Thank you, everybody.